Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Dr. Cindy Jones Nosacek practiced medicine at Columbia St. Mary's for over 30 years. She's published regularly in medical journals, but she also does something very interesting. She volunteers her time practicing at a medical clinic in Uganda. We're going to get to all of this, but first, Dr. Cindy, got to ask you, you were born here in Milwaukee.
Yes, I was.
Did you always want to be a doctor?
Yes, I did. When I was 5 years old, I told everybody that I was going to be a doctor someday, and at a time when women didn't become doctors.
What was it at that young age that drew you to that, where you wanted to take care of people?
Well, that was it. You know, I wanted to take care of people, and I wanted to be a family doctor because I could do everything from delivering the babies all the way up to grandma and grandpa and see the whole family.
It was a different time then, and there weren't a whole lot of women doctors except for what? Nuns? They were doctors at the time?
Yeah, nuns. I mean, there were some other women who managed to get in, but it was very difficult. I knew one woman physician who, on the first day of medical school, went into a class and the professor looked at her and he said, 90%. That was going to be her top grade. No matter what she did, she started with a 90 and went down from there. And that's what a 90 was a B.
Oh my gosh. That had to be so intimidating to hear that on the first day.
We were new and people had to figure out what to do with us.
Was it difficult to get into med school to begin with because of your gender?
No, because it was right after the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't discriminate based on sex. The class before me was probably the first class that had a lot of women in it. And so we were new, but we were able to get in. In fact, I was accepted at two medical schools.
So you mentioned that one professor made that comment. Did you get more, I don't want to use the word discrimination, but more of an attitude from the professors or from the male med students?
I think it was both. It was very hard to get into medical school. So a lot of the students felt that we were taking the place of a man who would work more hours and would see more patients and wouldn't drop out to have kids compared to them. What they didn't know is that when I went into practice for many years, I was their top producer. So it didn't quite work out that way. They knew friends who couldn't get in, and they just assumed that we got in only because of our gender and not because we knew what we were doing.
Do you think it made the female students work even harder?
You know, I think it made us keep our heads down.
In what way?
Medicine is a combination of your grades, and then you could be very knowledgeable, but a very lousy person. So there's that subjective part to it. So you didn't want to tick off people too much because that subjective part was an important part of your grade.
So they were looking at what, your ability to have that bedside manner?
Yes. What they felt was a proper bedside manner. We were still in the era where, you know, doctor knows best. And sometimes they would do things without a patient's full knowledge. And so we were the ones that were coming in and we were talking to the patients. For example, I was in a delivery where the baby was very premature and died shortly after birth. And while the attending was going and filling out the paperwork, I sat with the mother and the father and we were talking. And I said, well, what would you like to see your baby? Because in those days, you just whisk the baby right away. And they said they would. So I went back to the nurse's station to tell them. And they were talking to the attending and they were saying, well, do you think we should ask her about the baby? He said, oh, no, they never want to see their babies. And I said, well, I asked and she does.
Did you get in trouble for that?
Yeah. I got a dirty look. Yeah. Yeah. I had another woman who came in and she was miscarrying, but nobody was telling her that. I mean, she knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
But nobody told me they hadn't told her. So I went in and, you know, I just said, oh, I'm so sorry you lost your baby and all of that. And, you know, she started crying because, of course, she lost her baby. And when they do your evaluation, you know, they put in, they have their comments. And his comment was that I made a patient cry. Afterwards, the woman and her husband came up to me and thanked me because they said they knew something was going on, but nobody was telling them what was going on. And they were glad that somebody was able to sit down and talk to them about it.
I'm just curious, at what point did that attending physician plan to tell them?
I have no idea.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I parked at the doctor's parking lot and got a ticket for parking there.
Just because you were a woman?
Because I was a pregnant woman, and, you know, pregnant women obviously can't be doctors.
Dr. Cindy Nosacek talks about being the first pregnant doctor in her medical program.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Dr. Cindy Nosacek. You mentioned having kids. Is it correct, while you were in your residency, you were the first pregnant doctor?
Yes. I was the second married woman physician and the first one to get pregnant on them.
Interesting way to put it.
Yeah.
All right. So you, once you knew you were pregnant, at what point did you tell them that, well...
Oh, right away.
Oh, you did? Oh,
yeah.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right away.
And what was the reaction?
They were pretty happy about it. And actually, they did accommodate me as much as possible. It was a little difficult because I get bad morning sickness. So during the morning when I was doing rounds, I'd carry a bag of popcorn with me because that was one of the few things I could keep down. And people mentioned it and I said, well, you got two choices. I could either eat the popcorn or I could throw up on you. And you got your choice.
Did you have any comments from any of the patients about you being pregnant?
No, not really.
Because, I mean, there had to be a point where you started the show and your white coat could only disguise so much.
Yeah, no. They were all pretty interested in what was going on.
You said that they accommodated you. You know, now we see parking spaces for pregnant women. Did they accommodate you that much?
No. It was more... You know, if there were only so many chairs, I'd get a chair. I had a little bit of bleeding early in my pregnancy, but I was just so emotionally upset that I actually called up one of the guys that was doing call in another area. And I just can't stay here. I have to go home. And they let me go home. And there was no recriminations about it.
But you did get a ticket.
That was when I was an attending over at Columbia St. Mary's. I parked at the doctor's parking lot and got a ticket for parking there.
Just because you were a woman?
Because I was a pregnant woman, and, you know, pregnant women obviously can't be doctors.
Well, I think you proved them wrong, because you had how many children?
Five.
Five children. Did you practice the entire time you were raising those kids?
Yes.
How demanding was that?
It's all a matter of setting your priorities, and my main priority was my family. So I could work my schedule around them. So I made sure that I didn't work late at night. So I was home with them when they were at home. I just did it.
Did you ever take the kids to work with you?
Yes. On rounds. Yeah, I would take them with me. I even took them on nursing home rounds with me. And they would each adopt what they called grandma in the bed. And I would just take them around and they would see patients with me and the patients just loved it.
I would think in a nursing home, that would have been a real treat.
It was a real treat. You know, some of them would even have candy for them because I went around some once a month or once every other month, and they made sure they had some candy for them.
Did you ever face, once you were practicing or even attending, any sort of discrimination because you were a woman doctor?
I think by the time I got into practice, it wasn't as much of a problem. One of the groups that I joined, I was the first woman that wasn't a radiologist or somebody that really was in competition with them. And they did have a lot of trouble with that, and they let me go after the end of a year.
What about the patients? Did they have a stereotype of women doctors?
Well, when I was a resident, I was covering for one of my colleagues, and a woman called, and I was talking to her and answering her questions. And she mentioned that when she was first going to come to the clinic, my name had come up. And she had refused to see me because the women doctors on General Hospital didn't know anything.
She was basing her entire thoughts and evaluation of you as a doctor based on a soap opera.
Yes.
But it did work to your advantage in a lot of ways because there were some cultures that the women felt more comfortable with you.
Yeah, I had quite a few Muslim patients and women from India that would come to see me. I think a lot of women, even in this country, just felt more comfortable talking to me about things that they may have hesitated to talk to a male doctor about.
Was that rewarding for you when you'd hear a patient say, I can tell you this, and I would have been uncomfortable telling a male doctor?
It usually didn't come out quite that way, but they would tell me things that I know no male would have ever heard.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
You know, my patients were very upset because that's one of the reasons they wanted to see me, is because they knew that I would follow them throughout.
Dr. Cindy Nosicek talks about the real reason she retired from her medical practice.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Dr. Cindy Nosicek. How has medicine changed in the years that you've practiced? Because again, over 30 years from the time that you started when there were very few female doctors to when you finally said, okay, we're going to stop seeing patients like this. How did medicine change for you?
Medicine's become more corporate, more we want you to see so many patients in a day. We want you to follow the schedule. You can only practice this way. You know, you can't see patients here. You can only see patients here. It's very corporate, very by the rules, by the book. You know, you're a widget in their factory.
Do you think that was a better way to practice medicine, or is it better now?
I think the past was a little bit better when physicians had a little more flexibility, and within the organization we had a certain status where they would listen to us if we had concerns.
Do you wish in some ways that medicine would go back to the way it used to be?
Yes. Not from when women first were entering medicine, but I think, you know, 20 years ago, medicine was a lot different than it is now. You had a hospital employee, and the hospitals are now in big conglomerates, and it's run like a business.
Do you think the results are better than they used to be? And I mean the results medically for the patients.
I don't know that it's helped that much. I think our knowledge is better. You know, results get better as our knowledge grows. And as we realize maybe things that, you know, was new and cutting edge years ago was probably going in the wrong direction, and now we have to change because we've learned more.
Were those reasons that you decided to retire?
I retired because I was just tired of the corporate. When I first started practicing, I did a little bit of everything. I delivered babies. I took care of the babies, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. I went to nursing homes. I saw my inpatients. And I was happy doing that. And the last straw came when I was told I could no longer see my patients in the hospital. And, you know, my patients were very upset because that's one of the reasons they wanted to see me, is because they knew that I would follow them throughout. And it was a corporate decision. The specialists were thrilled that I was seeing the patients. They'd even come up to me and say, oh, I'm so glad you're still seeing your patients, because you know them. You know, and you could tell me if this is what's, if this is the way it always is or it isn't. I think also, too, when you're in the hospital, people are seeing you at your worst. And I could remember seeing them at better times. Plus, then the follow-through. You know, because I saw them in the hospital and I knew what went on there, it was easier to continue what we were doing once they were discharged.
You decided to retire, but you didn't stop working. You decided at that point to go back to school to get another degree.
Yes, I went to The Ohio State University and got a master's degree in medical bioethics.
Why?
Because I thought that's the area where people are making the decisions. You know, medicine is not pure science. You know, when people say follow the science, that's not true. Medicine is not, it's what we call an applied science. So you take your knowledge and then you apply it to the patient. For example, we say that it's okay that 90% of people take a statin to protect the 10% that don't. We set that standard. You know, it's not like if your blood pressure's 139 over 89, you're going to do fine. And when it's 141 over 91, you know, it's horrible. But that's where we treat it. That's where we draw the line. And that's where we apply the science.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
I went to see how the clinic was run, and if I could be of any use to them.
Dr. Cindy Nosicek talks about her decision to volunteer her medical talents in Uganda.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Dr. Cindy Nosacek. About 15 years ago, you also got involved in practicing medicine again, but not in this country. You got involved with a country in Africa. Tell us how all that came about.
Well, our parish has a sister parish in northern Uganda, in a town called Padibe. And this is an area that it was one of the camps during the Civil War. And people were in these camps now for 20 years.
And Uganda had a bloody civil war.
They had a bloody civil war in the north. You know, they were kidnapping children and, you know, turning them into soldiers. And the military was doing its part to make things miserable for the people. So in 2010, they signed a peace treaty, and they were just getting out of the war. And that's when we started our sister parish relationship with them.
And why did you decide to go to Uganda at that point?
I decided a little bit later. The Three Holy Women Parish was involved with it longer than I've been involved with it. But one of the things that we worked on was the medical clinic, among our other projects. I mean, we've done projects such as building a sunflower press so people have a place where they can sell their product and earn money so they could send their children to school. But the clinic needed some major repairs, and we had done that. And so I went to see how the clinic was run and if I could be of any use to them.
What were your initial impressions once you got there?
They do the best with what little they have. There's a lot of adjustments that I have to make in terms of this is what they've got. You know, this is maybe what we do in the United States, but this is what we have to do to adapt. For example, they didn't have a way to do blood counts. And when somebody's really sick, what we call sepsis, one of the things you do is you get blood counts and you get blood cultures. Well, we can't do blood cultures. We can't do any cultures. So I had to adapt the United States protocol to work with what they had.
What's the clinic like? I mean, we know what it's like when we walk into a clinic here in southeastern Wisconsin, but what was it like where you were in Africa?
They have hours where they see patients, but you don't get an appointment. So people come and it's first come, first served. So some people may wait several hours before you can get to them. And then you see them, you decide what, if any, tests that they may need, and then they go to the lab, and then they got to go back in line to come back so that you could go over the test results with them. So it's a lot different. They have an inpatient area where they see it, mostly malaria, for children up through adults, and then a maternity ward.
You said you saw a lot of patients who had malaria. Were you ever afraid that you would contract that?
I take something so that I don't. But I just got the statistics from the Ugandan government, and about 75% of the people there get malaria every year in that district.
In that particular area. Now, is this more of a rural area?
Yes, it's very rural. Most people are subsistence farmers, so they live off what they can plant. And if the harvest is good, then they get to eat well. And if the harvest isn't so good, then come December, January, February, they may be down to one or two meals a day.
And how would that affect their health?
We didn't see a lot of starvation, but we did see a lot of people that were thinner. And, you know, fortunately, for the most part, they're young, so it doesn't affect their immediate health.
Did you see a lot of older people? I mean, what's the life expectancy?
It's in their 60s, mid-60s, upper 60s. Average age in Uganda is 16.
That's the average.
Average age. So there's a lot of children. And it's hard because there's not a lot of resources for chronic illnesses. For diabetes, we had two medications. If you needed something more than that, then you had to go to Gulu, which is almost 2 hours away, to get special care and get insulin. We didn't do, you know, if you had heart disease, again, you had to either go to a hospital 30 minutes away or more likely the one 2 hours away.
Which, if you've ever been to Africa, people don't have cars. It's not like here where we just hop in the Suburban and go to the ER.
Yeah, no. Some of them, if they're lucky, they may have friends or relatives that could drive them. A lot of them take the bus.
And the buses there are much different than they are here.
You can't move in those buses. They cram them.
They're like mini buses that they might have 40 people in.
Yeah, they do have mini buses, and then those will go to more places. But then they also have regular big buses, but those tend to go between the cities.
It's just a whole other life.
Oh, yeah.
That if you've ever been there, you do see how little so many people have, but they do a lot with what they do have.
That's right. You know, cancer there is a death sentence. You know, most people cannot afford chemotherapy or radiation therapy, much less take the time necessary to get them somewhere for that kind of treatment.
So when you've been in the clinic, have people been diagnosed with cancer?
Not where I have been, no. But I've visited women who have had cancer. And, you know, the basic, it's, again, by the time they're diagnosed, it's too late. And you just can keep them comfortable.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
To have a real marriage, you have to invite your whole village, your clan, his clan. It's a big deal.
Dr. Cindy Nosacek tells us how marriage is different in Uganda.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with Dr. Cindy Nosacek. I'm your host, Libby Collins. I would imagine that the people who would come to the clinic when you would be there would be very, very grateful for the help that you'd be giving them. Because again, one more set of hands helping the people who work in the clinic regularly. But what sort of things have you experienced with people who were really very grateful to you for what you had done?
They're happy to see me. They know that I'm working with the clinic, again, to try to see what we can do to modify their protocols. Everybody there has a smartphone, so they can download on their phones various apps that can give them up-to-date medical information. I also see patients, if they're seeing a specialist somewhere, they want to just make sure that I think that their doctor's doing the right thing, so they come to see me and I can go over, you know, what's going on or see if maybe there's something that they could afford that's going on, but usually not. I mean, their specialists are good. And most of the time I'm just telling them, yes, this is what we would do in the United States.
But when you've been there, and the clinic is free for patients, correct?
No.
They do pay.
No, the government clinic is free. There they have to pay. But it's, you know, less than a dollar to be seen in the clinic. A delivery is...
A delivery meaning a baby delivery.
A baby delivery is about $60. I mean, they do ultrasounds for, you know, 30. You know, it's...
Well, a lot of those mothers are very young, too.
Yes.
Compared to what you see here.
Most of them. Yeah, I've seen some older women. A lot of women, you know, have children up until they can't.
But are girls marrying younger there than they are here?
No. Younger, I guess it depends on what you want to call them, getting married.
Okay. Well, explain that.
Because in Uganda, if you get to have a real marriage, you have to invite your whole village, his village, your clan, his clan. It's a big deal. The average wedding in Uganda is $20,000 for people who are, where a good salary is about $20 a month. And so a lot of people, you know, live together, you know, may have had a couple of children before they can raise the funds to have, and it's two weddings. You have a traditional wedding and then a church wedding. And so, and each of those costs about that much. And so a lot of couples just live together until they can raise the funds to have a proper wedding. Because if you just go to the Justice of the Peace and get married, you're not really married.
Let's talk a little bit about the babies, because I know you've taken care of quite a few of them. And just because they don't have what we have here, babies are, well, you don't have the disposable diapers and all of that. Explain about what babies and little ones wear when you see them.
Usually they wear a T-shirt and not much else until they're potty trained, and then they can start wearing pants. Mothers use rags for diapers to help absorb, but, you know, we've been in church and all of a sudden a little girl stands up and she goes in the middle of the, you know, middle of church and she pees right out of the floor and the mother's just wiping it up.
Those T-shirts, though, are at a premium.
Yes. Yeah. Sister gives them as a gift for women who have their babies at the clinic. And they're so popular that women will come back and insist that they never got one, even though Sister's very careful about checking off that she did indeed give them one of those T-shirts.
When you look at the people there, they don't have very much, especially when you look at the consumerism here in the United States and where we always are wanting more, more, more. In a place like Uganda, the people you're caring for really make do with what they have.
Yes, and they have to. And so when the time comes and to help support the priest that serves the church there, a lot of them will give items like chickens and vegetables and homemade brooms instead of cash. And when they do give cash, it's usually 50 cents, a dollar. I mean, for them, that's a lot of money.
What about you as a doctor there? Have they ever tried to pay you in an unusual currency?
Well, I get paid in chickens.
I'm sorry?
I get paid in chickens.
What do you mean?
Chickens. They give me a live chicken.
After you've taken care of a patient, they bring you a chicken or they bring it with you to the appointment? Generally,
it's afterwards, just to show appreciation for my being there for the month. Where we stay, they'll bring us a chicken.
What do you do with the chicken when you get it,
Cindy? We eat it.
Seriously?
Seriously.
So when you're in Uganda and you've got your chickens, you're also preparing the chickens for dinner?
No, I don't butcher the chickens. They have a cook that does that. But I get it for dinner.
Well, the first time you got a chicken, were you surprised?
Yes, because this was at church, and they're bringing up, you know, the offertory for the offerings. And, you know, I turn around, and there's this chicken. And so I pick up this chicken. I don't know what to do with it. You know, it's halfway through church service. And so I look at the priest, and what he did is he took the chicken, he threw it under the altar cloth, and the chicken went to sleep, and we just went on with our service.
It's definitely a different place than here in the United States. What is the future of what you're doing with your parish and with the sister parish that you have in Uganda? What is it that you're looking at doing in the future?
We basically do three things. The first is education. Right now, we are supporting about 20 students directly. Through our other projects, we support 100 indirectly, all the way up through university. We've nurses, a dentist. Yeah, so some of them come back, some of them don't, but they still send money to support the community. Our second are our projects. Recently, we just helped to rebuild the preschool. There had been a windstorm, and it blew the roof off of where their storage area was, where they stored all their food and supplies. So they had to move everything into the principal's office. And the kids didn't have any playground equipment, so we sent money, and they fixed the roof so it's not falling down anymore, repaired the storage room, and the kids now have some playground equipment.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
The dad and the moms and the babies. And yeah, if you get too close to them, you know, daddy may just, you know, give you a little growl or pound on his chest.
Dr. Cindy Nosacek talks about an encounter with gorillas.
Now more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Dr. Cindy Nosacek. The administration here in the United States recently cut off funding to a lot of African countries with U.S. aid. How is that going to affect them by not getting those kinds of funds in places where you've been?
Seriously. Again, I just got the latest statistics from Uganda. And because they don't, part of what USAID was going to was help the clinics were able to hire people to do follow-ups on people who are HIV positive. And especially for pregnant women who are HIV positive, to try to prevent them from passing it on to their babies. And then after the babies are born, follow up for them to make sure that they get the proper testing. And the numbers have gone down over the last year.
Significantly?
Significantly. Yeah, because there's no one to do the follow up.
Does that disturb you?
Yes, it does. You know, I know that USAID was also going for things that the people didn't necessarily support. And in terms of political action, you know, try to overturn laws that the people didn't necessarily want overturned. And tying
their, They're a very conservative culture.
Very conservative culture. You know, tying the aid to the culture, to these laws getting passed or not getting passed. And so that I disagree with to some extent. On the other hand, it does a lot of good. At the clinic where I worked, not only did she have two people to follow up for the HIV patients, USAID also paid the salary of one of the midwives and paid the salary of who they call the medical officer. He's like a physician assistant. And because of that, she's now got to dig into her resources, which she normally runs in the red, to pay those two. And the medical officer got a 50% pay cut, and she cut the midwife's salary by a third because that's all she could afford to give them.
Without USAID, how do you think communities like that will survive?
I think some of the progress that they've made, you know, they're going to lose. You know, HIV is still one of their top 10 killers in Uganda. There's others that are worse, but you know, even things, something as simple as getting out medicated malaria nets for so that people sleep under the nets at night is affected. And, you know, malaria deaths in that district is number two.
Now, for the whole country?
It's number three, I think, in the whole country. It's number two for them. Number one for the whole country and for them is premature births because they just don't have the incubators and the oxygen and all those things that we have, you know, to support a very premature newborn.
How many times have you been to Uganda?
I've been there 12 times.
It isn't all just taking care of patients. You've also had the opportunity to experience some things. And I understand that you actually did a gorilla trek.
Yes, yes, we did. When we were first told the cost of it, we said, oh, no, you know, because
it's very pricey.
It's very, very pricey. So what we found, so they came back to us and said, oh, no, it's going to be this price. And what we found out is the Archbishop of Gulu personally went to the head of their park system and said that they should charge us what they would charge a Ugandan. And so we got the Ugandan rate, and that we could afford.
So what was the experience like?
Well, they drive you out, and then you walk to where the gorillas are.
You walk to where the gorillas are, but the gorillas live in the mountains.
But you're right up against the mountains. So they spend the night up in the trees, and there's people that know where they are, and they track.
I mean, how far did you have to walk to find gorillas?
We actually didn't have to walk that far because we're so old.
Wait a minute. The gorillas came to you?
Well, no, we came to the gorillas, but we just didn't have to walk so far. Not like some of the younger people. Some of them walked for an hour or more. I think we were like 15, 20 minutes to where we could go to the gorillas.
And what was the experience like?
Well, they take a stick and they hit them on a tree, and all the gorillas come down from the trees because they know what's going. And then you just see this gorilla family, you know, with the dad and the moms and the babies. And if you get too close to them, you know, daddy may just, you know, give you a little growl or pound on his chest, and you step back a little bit. But it makes going to the zoo not as fun.
Well, you had the zoo come to you.
That's right.
You've been there 12 times. You've been to Uganda 12 times. Do you intend to go back? Do you intend to continue your work there?
As long as we can. Hopefully next spring.
And your parish?
Our parish, you know, they've continued, Three Holy Women has continued the relationship now for 16 years, and I don't see them stopping anytime soon. And we're all volunteers. So any donations, money that we raise, all of that eventually goes to the people in Bidibe.
Well, it really comes full circle for you after practicing medicine for as long as you did and now being able to volunteer your talents to people who are really in need.
And they're so grateful. Last time we were there, we came back with, that's about a 2-liter container. They call it OD. Well, we would say it's organic peanut butter. You know, it's ground, you know, ground roasted nuts, and the staff gave that, and we had a little party and some dancing and music, and So we had a good time.
Sounds like that was better than a chicken.
Better than a chicken. Well, I can't take the chickens home.
Dr. Cindy Nosacek, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We've been talking with Dr. Cindy Nosacek. We found out how she was the first pregnant doctor in her medical program, why she retired from her practice here in Milwaukee, and how she now volunteers in Uganda, helping the people there with her medical skills. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Cindy, go to WTMJ.com, where you'll also find a link to Three Holy Women Parish and the work they do in Uganda. And you'll also find a partial transcript, courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.
We get it. You're on the go, and life gets in the way. Stay up to date on all things WTMJ with podcasts of every show available on WTMJ.com. And don't forget, you can stream WTMJ online and watch your favorite WTMJ shows on YouTube every show when you want it, no matter where you are. We are Wisconsin's radio station, News Radio 620 WTMJ.